Welcome. The following presentation from Answers in CME is part of an educational activity titled Shifting Our Focus Toward Novel Therapeutic Approaches in Psoriasis, the Mechanisms and Clinical Profiles of Tyrosine Kinase 2 Inhibitors. To access the full program and supporting materials, visit www.answersincme.com/AYV860. This activity is supported through an educational grant from Bristol Myers Squibb.
Hello, I'm Dr. April Armstrong, and I am Professor of Dermatology and Associate Dean for Clinical Research at the University of Southern California in Los Angeles. In this educational activity, we will review the therapeutic rationale and clinical profiles for tyrosine kinase 2, or TYK2 inhibitors, in the treatment of moderate to severe plaque psoriasis. And we will also explore how these emerging TYK2 inhibitors may impact treatment algorithms in the future. Now, let's begin by talking about the unmet need for patients with psoriasis on existing oral therapies. Acitretin, apremilast, cyclosporine, and methotrexate are oral therapies that are currently used for patients with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis. Among these oral therapies, acitretin, apremilast, and methotrexate can be used on a longer-term basis. But acitretin and methotrexate typically require laboratory monitoring long-term. Each medication may be associated with its specific adverse events, so their use depends on patient preferences as well as long-term tolerability. Therefore, we're interested in new, safer treatments, particularly TYK2 inhibitors. TYK2, a key player in psoriasis pathogenesis and a member of the JAK kinase family, works intracellularly in pairs with other JAKs, and this pairing is very specific to different parts of the psoriasis pathogenic cascade. Therefore, by inhibiting TYK2, we can modulate different aspects of psoriasis pathogenesis. While TYK2 inhibition leads to very specific inhibitory effects, especially in the pathogenesis of psoriasis, certain types of JAK pairings demonstrate a lack of specificity in their downstream effects. The reason that some JAK-JAK pairings have pleiotropic effects is that these are responsible for certain normal physiologic processes, such as hematopoiesis and granulopoiesis. By inhibiting one of the JAK pairings, we can inadvertently disrupt these cellular processes and see safety signals, for example, in our laboratory workup in terms of platelets or red blood cells or white blood cells. So we want to make sure that we are as specific as possible to the pathway that is related to psoriasis. There are three major TYK2 inhibitors currently being explored in clinical trials for moderate to severe plaque psoriasis. Deucravacitinib is the furthest along, completing phase 3 studies. In summary, there's an unmet need in terms of safety for patients with moderate to severe psoriasis who are on existing oral therapies. And TYK2 inhibitors for moderate to severe psoriasis may provide the benefits of safety and tolerability by directly inhibiting a key step in psoriasis pathogenesis. In this session, let us discuss the latest efficacy data on emerging TYK2 inhibitors in patients with moderate to severe psoriasis. In the pivotal POETIC PSO1 and PSO2 studies, patients on deucravacitinib showed significant improvement compared to those on placebo and apremilast. Notably, about 58% of patients on deucravacitinib achieved an at least 75% reduction in the psoriasis area and severity index score, or PASI 75, at primary endpoint at week 16. And this is compared to apremilast at 35%. This comparison was statistically significant, as well as a comparison to the placebo group. Similar trends were seen for the physician global assessment 0 and 1 results, or clear or almost clear, where the response rate with deucravacitinib was shown to be significantly better compared to that of apremilast and of placebo. Recent data from a poster presented at the American Academy of Dermatology annual meeting show that patients who did not respond to apremilast, defined as not achieving at least 50% improvement in their PASI or PASI 50, showed a good response when switched to deucravacitinib. Over 46% of them were converted to a PASI 75, which is significant. This is a large number of patients who are achieving an endpoint that has also been shown to be linked to improvements in their dermatology life quality index. This is clinically relevant because we may have patients who would prefer oral therapy, but just do not respond as well to apremilast. Looking ahead, I would wait approximately 4 to 6 months before switching from apremilast to deucravacitinib. These data show that we now have an oral therapeutic agent that has impressive efficacy and offers us a step up from what we could previously offer patients with moderate to severe psoriasis. Additionally, it helps us answer how deucravacitinib compares with apremilast, which is an oral medication that is frequently used in patients with psoriasis who prefer oral therapies. Here are recent data from a phase 2 dose ranging and escalation study that showed brepocitinib, another TYK2 inhibitor, demonstrated efficacy compared to placebo in moderate to severe plaque psoriasis. In summary, there are several emerging TYK2 inhibitors that are demonstrating efficacy comparable to that of biologics in moderate to severe psoriasis. In this session, we will discuss the safety of emerging TYK2 inhibitors for moderate to severe psoriasis. The safety profile of deucravacitinib was consistent with its mechanism of action of TYK2 inhibition and did not show any of the side effects typically arising due to the lack of specificity of action of other JAK inhibitors. Overall, the safety profile was excellent, and the most common adverse events are nasopharyngitis and upper respiratory tract infection, which are seen in high numbers in patients on placebo treatment as well. There were no clinically meaningful change seen in multiple laboratory parameters in patients treated with deucravacitinib compared to placebo. In the POETIC PSO 1 and 2 studies, the adverse events of interest with deucravacitinib were folliculitis, acne, and herpes zoster. The folliculitis and acne were fairly mild, and in some patients, transient. The exposure-adjusted incidence rate for herpes zoster was 0.9 per 100 patient years with deucravacitinib. No cases of herpes zoster with deucravacitinib were serious, systemic, or led to treatment discontinuation. In terms of safety data for brepocitinib in moderate to severe plaque psoriasis, the most common adverse events were nasal pharyngitis, upper respiratory tract infections, and headaches. There were some elevations seen in LDL, HDL, and total cholesterol, but fortunately, there were no clinically meaningful changes seen in hematological parameters like reticulocyte counts and neutrophil counts, and no cases of herpes zoster. In summary, the specific mechanisms of action of emerging TYK2 inhibitors for psoriasis is seemingly translated to the safety profiles compared to that of other JAK inhibitors. Especially with the larger studies in deucravacitinib, there were no meaningful laboratory abnormalities that are associated with this particular TYK2 inhibition. In this session, let's discuss some monitoring and management considerations for the emerging TYK2 inhibitors. In the POETIC PSO1 and PSO2 studies of the TYK2 inhibitor deucravacitinib, for the laboratory parameters that were studied, including lipids, LFTs, and some of the hematologic parameters, the placebo lines were very similar to those of deucravacitinib and apremilast. Therefore, based on the phase 3 clinical data, I do not think there will be a uniform need for laboratory monitoring during TYK2 inhibition treatment with deucravacitinib. However, we'll see what the U.S. Food and Drug Administration decides on that particular issue. The adverse events associated with deucravacitinib, mainly acne and folliculitis, occurred at low rates, were mild or moderate, and patients who experienced these AEs did not discontinue deucravacitinib. Dermatologists are experts at managing acne and folliculitis, so typically going with topical medications first, for example, such as topical retinoids or benzoyl peroxide or salicylic acid, would help to manage these AEs. When we're thinking about herpes zoster, I would encourage patients who are eligible for the zoster vaccine to first get vaccinated per the recommended dosing schedule. Patients at high risk of a zoster infection should be informed of that risk, and in case of zoster infection, should be advised to contact a healthcare professional immediately to enable prompt initiation of antiviral therapy. In summary, the specific mechanism of action of TYK2 inhibitors results in a safer clinical profile compared to other traditional oral therapies for psoriasis. Therefore, going forth with the use of deucravacitinib in the future in clinical practice, we need to take into account these laboratory data from the phase 3 study when considering recommendations for laboratory monitoring. In the final session, we'll discuss how the emerging TYK2 inhibitors may fit into the current clinical treatment paradigm of moderate to severe psoriasis, and also how we might optimize their use and integration into practice as they become available. Patients who may benefit from treatment with a TYK2 inhibitor include those with moderate to severe psoriasis and are eligible to receive systemic or biologic therapy, patients who are interested in a safer and more effective oral therapy, patients who are biologically naive or biologically experienced, and also patients with psoriatic arthritis. In addition, patients who have failed apremilast may be good candidates for this transition. Additionally, the preferred drug administrative route for a particular patient will also contribute to the therapeutic decision. When individualizing therapy for a patient, first, I determine whether a patient is an appropriate candidate for systemic therapy. The criteria include a body surface area of 10% or greater, involvement of special areas such as the scalp, palmar plantar psoriasis, genital psoriasis, or severe nail disease, and also if their topical therapies are not working. I also take into account safety concerns and comorbidities that our patients may have that prevent us from selecting one medication versus another. When deciding on the treatment, I tell patients what my preference is, but I also have a discussion about their preferences and treatment goals so that we can align our goals and choose the best medicine for them. Shared decision-making starts with good communication. To foster effective patient-clinician communication, I try to find out what the patient wants, what are their goals and preferences, and how does psoriasis affect that? And then I would then offer them options and see how they are reacting and how they are digesting these various options. Most importantly, I provide resources to support the patient and help them make the decisions about their care with my guidance. This is an exciting time. Historically, we've needed to make trade-offs between efficacy and safety with oral therapies. With the TYK2 inhibitors, we are seeing evidence of good safety as well as efficacy. I'm quite optimistic about the landscape for the oral therapies in the future for patients with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis.
Thank you for listening. Please visit www.answersincme.com/AYV860 to view all program materials, complete the post-test, and get a certificate.